It's now time for the Fantasy 411 podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411. I'm Matthew Leach, talking fantasy baseball with MLB.com's lead fantasy writer, Fred Zinke. And it is time. The MLB.com fantasy player preview is out. Big congrats to everybody involved with that, which includes Fred. It's a ton of information, a ton of cool stuff, and everybody should go check it out at MLB.com/fantasy. And I think we will start with the first round. A lot of people do mocks for just the first round, and it's kind of hard to know much beyond that for an individual draft because your first pick starts affecting your future picks. So we'll go over what the first round looks like, and then we'll kind of talk a little about that, and then we'll move on. But first of all, Fred, anything you take from the overall experience, any kind of – I know we talked about this a little last week, but any sort of broad strategic ideas that you took from the overall player rankings?
It's such a long process over the winter that – by the end, when it comes out, from my end of things, you're just glad that it's out there and now everyone can look at it. And I don't know. I think what I took from, we're going to start by talking about the first round, but I think what I took from it this year is that there are a lot of good first round options, and most of them, can help you in a lot of categories. There aren't a lot of pitchers in our first round, but there's a pretty solid group of pitchers kind of after that, like in our second and third rounds, and then it starts to get really dicey. So I think pitcher decisions will drive overall draft decisions for a lot of owners this year. As far as when the preview was finishing, we were looking at the rankings, like the decision you make, are you comfortable with David Price or someone like that as your ace? I think, and we're going to talk about starting pitchers a little more later in this episode, but I think that's going to drive a lot of your draft, because if you're not comfortable with that, then you need to reach up to get a couple of the pitchers, or we'll get one of the couple pitchers that we're going to talk about earlier on today.
And it's interesting you say that, because I do want to talk about your starting pitching tiers, because I see a pretty big gap pretty early. But we will look at the first round and run through it real quick. Mike Trout, Mookie Betts, Jose Altuve, Chris Bryant, Nolan Arenado, 5. Paul Goldschmidt, Clayton Kershaw, Bryce Harper, 8. Josh Donaldson, Manny Machado, Max Scherzer, 11. Trey Turner, 12. Charlie Blackmon, Madison Bumgarner, Anthony Rizzo is top 15. There's a lot of interesting stuff in here. I don't think Trout in the one spot is surprising to anybody. I don't think Mookie Betts is particularly surprising. The first guy that kind of jumps out to me is Jose Altuve, and I think the projection has him at, 21 home runs. Let me make sure I have that correct. Yeah, 21 home runs, and that's really the question. Altuve will be enormously valuable really no matter what. I mean, he does so many things, but to me the question comes down to, what are you expecting from him in home runs? Are you thinking that 10 to 12 is a reasonable number based on history? Are you thinking that last year's breakout was real or at least the beginning of a new Altuve, and putting him at 20-plus homers? The fantasy player preview comes down fairly optimistic on Altuve's power. What goes into that decision?
Yeah, when we started the process, I thought that we would project more of a regression. But when you look at some of his underlying numbers, his home run to fly ball percentage, his rate of producing fly balls last season, how much hard contact he was making last season, it does seem like this power growth is more or less sustainable. And you have him having hit 24 home runs last season and 15 the year before. So if you just kind of put him somewhere in the middle there, he's a 19 or 20 homer player. And, at his age of 26, that seems like a pretty, it seems reasonable that he could kind of sit at that level for a few years. So, and then if you look at him I was surprised he came out as high as third on our rankings, but if he can be around 20 homers, and then I believe he's the only player in baseball to have stolen at least 30 bases in each of the last 5 seasons. And then he always seems to always hit for a high average. And I don't just mean 300, but well over 300. You start to look at someone with a really high floor. And I also love the Astros lineup this year and think it's greatly improved. So, a really high floor, and if he can keep all that 24 home run power, then a pretty high ceiling.
Yeah, to me, that's the thing. If you buy Altuve as a 20 home run player, then to me, the first big gap on the board is between 3 and 4. To me, if you buy that, if you say, look, this guy's a 20 home run player who pretty comfortably, I would say I'm more comfortable putting him in for 320 or higher than any other player on the board. I'm very comfortable putting him in for 30 home runs. And then you talk about the runs he's likely to score if he does all those things. To me, it's a three-player first tier, and then you start getting into the next tier, again, if the power is real.
Yeah, I mean, I actually find for me my first tier is probably four players. I'm pretty bullish on Chris Bryant, who we have at four, as far as I think Bryant's on the really short list of players who could lead the majors in home runs this season, and then hitting, you know, right in the heart of that really good Cubs lineup. I feel like he'll easily have triple digits for runs and RBIs and could even be one of those guys who pushes in towards 120 in either or both categories. So I feel like there's a good Bryant-Altuve debate, and I agree with you that I think the answer to the Bryant-Altuve debate is whether Altuve's the 24-homer player, the 15-homer player, or something in the middle.
We move down the list a little bit, and one of the things that definitely jumps out to me is for the second year in a row, a lot of depth at the top at third base. You've got Bryant, Arenado, Donaldson, Machado. How does that affect you strategically? We talked last week about how positional scarcity is less of an issue than in memory. But if it's not scarcity, if you've at least got that kind of spectacular top tier, how important does it make it to get one of those guys at the top so that you're not settling for a next-level third baseman?
Yeah, to me, when I think of my priorities in the early rounds and position scarcity, I'm not too concerned with how many really good players there are at that position. I know that's a factor, but I'm really thinking about the drop-off of if I don't have any of those players, what I'm looking at in round 15 at third base. If I have to wait all the way till there and I end up with a Mike Moustakas or someone like that, someone who you can get later on in a draft, and what that kind of positional floor is like. This year, third base is quite deep, and the options, I mean, you can get Justin Turner in a double-digit round this season, maybe even round 13 or 14 in a 10-team league. So, it's pretty deep all the way through. It would definitely be nice to get one of those elite third basemen, especially Machado this year. I'm glad that he made it into our top 10 for our rankings, because with him having third base and shortstop eligibility, even though I'm talking about how there's not a lot of position scarcity this year, just someone who can play multiple positions in your lineup as your superstar player is really valuable.
We move down just a little bit, and a guy we talked about, probably the name we've talked about the most times over the times we've been doing this podcast, Bryce Harper, is in the eighth spot. And on the one hand, it's kind of where you have to put him. And on the other hand, it's almost certainly wrong in one direction or the other. And maybe I'm wrong, and maybe Harper plays exactly at that level and hits about 290 and hits 35 home runs and steals 10 bases and drives in 100 and is at that level. But it seems to me that it is more likely that Harper will either far exceed that and be one of the two or three or four best players in fantasy, or will fall short of that and will not produce at a first-round level. So is that kind of what goes into that? Is that kind of how he ends up at a number eight overall, that there's this wide range of outcomes that could take him anywhere from first to 20th?
Yep. You've pretty much perfectly explained the thought process behind that. I mean, we're looking at, with Harper especially, this is someone who's been viewed as ultra-talented since he was, in his mid-teens and expected for greatness, and then showed us that greatness so early in his career. It's not just that he had a 42-homer season. I mean, that 42-homer season came with a 330 batting average and a 460 on base. It just shows how talented he is. We felt when we were ranking the players that he's just too talented to have another season like he had last year, which seems to have been somewhat injury-impacted, and his skills were definitely down last year. There was some bad luck for him last year, but that's not all of it. His skills were down last year, but he's still so young. He's so talented. We felt like, I mean, he has to improve. He can't stay at that level. He's just too good. And with Dusty Baker letting him run, now you have his ability to steal bases on top of that. But it seems like it would be foolish to just, and it's possible, as you said, that it would be foolish maybe for us to just predict a complete bounce back and him to have a 330, 40 homer season in 2017. So, you kind of split the difference. You hedge your bets a little bit. You acknowledge with a prediction of, we predicted 292 with 33 homers and right around 100 RBIs and runs. You acknowledge he's a really strong bounce back candidate, but you can't go all in really and predict a full bounce back. And that's how he ends up at eight. I'm not sure if I would take him eighth over someone like Donaldson or Machado, but I do think that's roughly where he belongs.
And that was what I was about to ask you, is how high would you take him, you know, assuming nothing weird goes on in the draft before that point, assuming you're looking at a fairly conventional mixed league draft that kind of goes according to plan, for you personally, how high would you consider Harper a really viable choice?
Yeah, I could defend him, you know, I'd say anywhere around 7th or 8th and then down, but where I would probably take him, just being a little conservative sometimes when I draft it, I would probably take Donaldson or Machado ahead of him and maybe Scherzer. So I would probably take him more around 10th or 11th. It'd be really nice to start with Harper and then get someone super safe in the second round, like, say, Miguel Cabrera. That feels to me like a really nice start to a hitting lineup, and then come back with my ace starter in round 3.
So, and I realize this is not how fantasy works, but it's sort of a fun little way to put these guys together. And I'm kind of with you. I think 10 is a perfectly reasonable spot. I think it makes a lot of sense as a place to take Harper. So let's say you are looking at Harper, Scherzer, and Trey Turner. Three, which, you know, you bump Harper down to 10, you bump him behind the two third basemen, that's exactly where you are. Those are the next three guys on the board, offering completely different profiles, risk-reward profiles, positions, everything. One of those three guys is your first pick. Who do you want?
I think I would take Scherzer, and that we'll talk about this more when we get to the pitchers later on, but that has to do with just my preference this year to maybe try to avoid those low-end aces. I think this is how I would think about it with those three players. It's just fun that they all play for the Nats. If I felt comfortable waiting and I felt good about one of those Cueto price-level aces, then I'm okay with skipping Scherzer. If I don't take Trey Turner, then I better have a plan for steals in a subsequent round. And there's lots of other options out there, but I better have a plan for that because there are not that many players that can steal 40 or 50 bases in the majors right now, and Turner's one of them, and can hit 300 and can hit 15 home runs or something like that. If I feel cool with what I can do at pitcher in a few rounds and with what I can do with steals, then I'm okay with taking Harper. There are a lot of power hitters out there. I might take Scherzer and then worry about the power hitters later.
It's an interesting way to look at it, that when there are those guys who can bring overall first-round value and do something unique, that's something unique as in being that really reliable ace or bringing steals or something like that. That certainly has to tilt it, especially at that point when you're getting down a little later. One last guy in the top 15, I am not as high on Charlie Blackmon as the world seems to be. I look at a guy who had a breakout, who was not terribly young, who had two full seasons before. Part of it with Blackmon to me is it wasn't like he had partial seasons. He had two full seasons well into his prime years before that where he didn't do it. That screams career year to me. And if he walks back that power some, I don't see him. He's certainly a valuable player even then. He's not, to me, a top 15 kind of player if that power walks back a little bit. Are you buying the power, or are you okay even kind of baking in a little regression in power?
Yeah, we baked in some regression. We have him at 24 home runs after 29 last season. So, and then we have his batting average dropping from 324 to 303. I think some of what props up Blackmon is that the Rockies lineup at the top looks really good. So it's easy to see a path for him to be among the league leaders in runs scored and have a really nice RBI total and, you know, be around 20 steals. Now you've got a really nice five-category profile. I think DJ LeMay, who's a bit of a regression candidate, but I still think he'll be quite good if he's hitting second. And then you have Arenado, you've got Cargo, Trevor Story, and, like, it just keeps going. I know Ian Desmond's not, you know, has a lot of flaws in his game, but at the bottom half of your lineup, like, he looks pretty good. And that lineup just starts to look really deep. I haven't even mentioned David Dahl. And, like, that lineup looks really deep and maybe one that could lead the majors in scoring this year. And, you know, so if he's a 20 to 25 homer guy and a 20 steal guy and a 300 average guy and he's in on a lineup that good, he could be quite valuable.
We now move on to our starting pitcher preview, which we're going to spend a good bit of time on. There's a lot of interesting stuff in here. But I start with something I thought was really interesting. And a guy I've come around on a lot in the last couple of years. You have, well, not you personally necessarily, but the list at Tier 1 is Kershaw and Scherzer, and then Bumgarner starts Tier 2. For me, the gap is way bigger between Bumgarner and the fourth starting pitcher than it is between Scherzer and Bumgarner for a variety of reasons. But mostly, yeah, you give up basically 30 Ks a year, and that's not nothing, but the reliability of Bumgarner is so enormous, and he's younger, and Look, I didn't see anything in Scherzer last year that suggested he was slowing down. I want to be abundantly clear on that. But we didn't really see the signs that it was coming from Verlander. We didn't really see the signs. One year, just Felix started to slow down. These guys do slow down sometimes. So I'm not saying I expect Scherzer to be that guy. But to me, there's this like 5 or 10 or 15% chance that we start seeing him slow down a little bit. And if he does that, boy, the floor on Bumgarner is so absurd. It's probably the highest of any starter. To me, it's three guys in Tier 1 and then Tier 2. So I guess my question is, what has you, Bumgarner, down with the second group rather than up with the first two guys?
Yeah, you hit on it at the beginning. It's that strikeout total. And last year he boosted it, you know, a career high last year of, what was it, it was 251 strikeouts. But in his career, he's more been usually like a 220, 230 strikeout type guy, and we have met two projected for 233. That's really the drop, is him being around in the 230s, and then Scherzer in his two seasons with the Nats being in the 270s and the 280s, and then Kershaw, like his pace, I know he was hurt last season, but he had the 300, and then last season his pace would have put him, you know, into the high 200s again. So that's really where the tier draw break is there, is Scherzer and Kershaw being, other than Yu Darvish, Scherzer and Kershaw are the only two starters who you feel like you can count on if they stay healthy for 270, 280 strikeouts, and we can't put Bumgarner there. But I do agree with you on Bumgarner's like really high floor, and I am seeing him go. Well, he's in our first round if you're in a 15-team league, and I've even seen him go in the first round in some 12-team leagues, and I can't argue with that.
Well, let me put it to you another way then. We look at your second tier here. Bumgarner, Sale, Kluber, Syndergaard, Verlander, Lester. Coming at it from that perspective, there's not a guy in that group that I love Syndergaard. There's not a guy in that group that I would even give a second thought to taking over Bumgarner. So to me, I still, even if he is not up with the top two guys, to me maybe he's 1.5. But to me, he is a guy where if I get him, I feel good. I'm set. I've got a one. And even if it's not a 280 strikeout one, it's still a clear, I'm comfortable with this guy. I'm willing to take the risk that he might blow up because I don't think it's going to happen kind of one. And none of the rest of those guys, either because of ceiling or because of risk, do I have in that category. Is there a guy in that group that you think is at least a hard call or close to Bumgarner?
I think Syndergaard has the potential, but it's so risky as far as how many innings he's going to throw, and I still have some lingering health concerns for him. But I think some season Syndergaard's going to throw 220 innings, and when he does, I think the results are going to be spectacular. Just to go back to Bumgarner for a minute, one other thing I wanted to mention with him that we talked about a little bit when we were ranking him, he did have a 380 ERA in the second half last season. And I know it's just half a season and everything, but I kind of have the same things you mentioned with Scherzer. Sometimes I wonder with Bumgarner as far as, like, we're at a string of now, this would be seven seasons in a row if he can do it with more than 200 innings. And lately it's been getting up into the 220 and 225 range, and he's had those long postseason runs. Do you feel like Bumgarner's, like, safer than Scherzer, or do you feel like they're kind of equally safe?
I think health-wise they are pretty similar. I can't even logically explain this because it's not like there's a lot of volatility in Scherzer's performance in recent years, but I just feel a little safer. I think maybe this is the way to put it. I would be more surprised to see Bumgarner post a 3.5 ERA over a full year than I would be to see Scherzer post a 3.5 ERA over a full year.
Yeah, I can see the one rationale I can see is that Scherzer is prone to giving up home runs. So,
yep.
I mean, he could have a bad stretch at some point. When he has his eventual drop-off, nothing lasts forever. I mean, when he does, it'll probably be the strikeout rate drops. There's a few more guys on base when he gives up those home runs.
And look, to me, they are both clear. I'm not down on either one of them. To me, these guys are both clearly above anybody that is listed after them. I just, I'd be happy with either one of them. And again, my point is more that I think, I think Bumgarner, again, is closer to Kershaw and Scherzer than he is to that second group.
Now, out of the rest of the second group, which one would you say you would feel the most comfortable with as your ace? Because comfort's a really big deal when you pick your ace.
It definitely is. The guy I probably would feel the most secure in is Kluber.
Yeah.
That's probably the guy who, to me, has the best combination of floor and ceiling. and probably Lester after him. Again, you know, it's no secret from here. I'm an enormous Syndergaard fan. Where I would like Syndergaard is if it were some sort of situation where I knew I could get somebody safe pretty soon after. If I could feel comfortable that I could get somebody who was going to be reliably good soon after taking him or soon before taking him, I'd do that. But I just worry, and I may be worried too much about him. I think that you can make a fair point. The dude, even with everything that went on last year, still threw 180 innings and still was absolutely dominant. Even when we were always kind of worried about, well, is he right now? Is he off now? You look at the full season, it is superb. So I actually may be irrationally worried about him just because I like his performance so much and I don't want him to break. But to me, I'd be thrilled to get him, but the one guy out of that bunch beyond Bumgarner that I would feel really good about, both because of relatively low risk and potentially high reward, is Kluber. Is there another guy in that group that you like?
I think Kluber, I agree with you, is the safest. Yeah, I mentioned Syndergaard for the upside. I feel like Lester is Lester to me sticks out in that group as really safe, but with a really low ceiling.
Yep.
And to me, Verlander is and they're kind of at the tail end, I feel like, of that group. The other guys are kind of second-round picks, maybe early third, and Verlander and Lester are kind of later third. Lester, really high floor, but his floor and ceiling are almost the same thing to me. And then Verlander, I'm back on board, but it's hard to overlook what happened for a couple of seasons prior to last year.
Yep, I would not feel great about Verlander as my number one starter.
Yeah, but he has that. Well, he did it last year. That's 250 strikeout potential.
Right. Yeah,
and he's had a long track record for success. So it's almost like he's almost a little bit like us talking about Harper earlier with the top rankings, where Verlander belongs in that tier. He's been an ace for years. He deserves it. He had a couple down years. But when it comes time to actually say the name or click the mouse, you know, what are you going to – do you really have the guts to make Verlander your ace? Do you really have the guts to make Bryce Harper your first-round pick? And I don't know if I do.
If I'm looking at Verlander and the rest of these guys in this bunch are off the board, I am seriously considering going another direction and taking my chances with a guy in Tier 3. And so let's get to that now. Arrieta, Cueto, Price, Darvish, Strasburg, Archer. I may end up being totally wrong on Verlander, and he could have another great year, but I feel like the wait and take Cueto, Strasburg, Archer, I am willing to do that if there's somebody else I like on the board, because I'm just not sure the gap between those guys is that wide. Now, with that said, you know, we start getting to some really divergent profiles here. You look at somebody like Cueto, and even at his best, has never been a ridiculous strikeout guy. He led the league in Ks one year, but it was because he threw 240 innings. You know, Arrieta does not look like the same guy anymore. Price, you worry whether he's the same guy. You've got really health risk guys in Darvish and Strasburg, and another personal favorite who I think the sort of underlying numbers really would point to me for a bounce back, which is Archer. Who's your favorite? First of all, just who's your favorite guy from that bunch? If you do what I just said and you pass on a Verlander because you just can't pull the trigger there, and now you're down in Tier 3 and one of those guys is going to be your first starter, who would you like best as your first starter from that bunch?
I'd say like best would probably be Cueto. To me, Cueto and Lester are really similar in that, like you mentioned, kind of high floor, low ceiling guys. I just like Cueto on the Giants, that big park and everything. I have a hard time resisting Darvish this year for some reason.
Yeah.
I haven't drafted much, but I'm worried. But man, for say a fourth round pick, I would really like some investment in Darvish this season, because I know that if he makes 30 starts, he's going to get 250 strikeouts.
So there are three boom or bust guys in that category, and they are very different boom and bust guys in different ways. But Darvish, Strasburg, Archer, who are you taking first from that bunch?
Yeah, I think I'd have them in that order. I think I'm really interested in Darvish. To me, Darvish is less of an injury risk than Strasburg. I know they're both injury risks for sure, but I mean, Darvish had the lead up to Tommy John surgery where he had issues, and then he had Tommy John surgery, and now I'm hopeful that he's back. Strasburg, it just seems to be one thing after another each season. Every year has its own thing that happens and not only wipes him out for a while, but also affects his performance for a while. So I would not want Strasburg to be my ace. I could live with, if I missed out on that tier two that we talked about, I could live with Darvish as my ace, and then I quickly follow Darvish up with someone like Archer.
And I wanted to talk about Archer, again, partly because he's another kind of personal favorite, but, you know, you look at him, and I feel like there's a lot to like there. You look at some of the peripherals. You look at the home run to fly ball, spiked. You just kind of look at the pitcher, and I think he was pretty similar to what he'd been. You worry a little about, is this guy going to be mentioned in trade rumors every day, and does that start getting in his head? He's a relatively young guy. You look at, does he have those walk issues? Does he worry about throwing the ball over the plate? You know, there are reasons to worry, but I know I'm not the only one who thinks this, and this may be why I end up not getting him, but he seems like, not just because of the stuff, but because of the peripherals from last year, a guy I really like to rebound a lot and look a lot like the guy that we all liked so much going into 2016. Are you with me on him, or do you have more concerns? How do you look at Archer?
No, I'm with you, and I've come around a bit on him because I felt like I was the low man on Archer early last season. But I think that Archer can never really join the top tiers because he can't ever get his whip down. Like he's never had that sub 1.1 whip that a lot of the Bumgarner-type pitchers have. But now with him having had a high strikeout rate for two straight seasons, okay, I'm willing to say that that's who he is going forward while he's in his prime. And then when I look at his ERA, so from 2013 to 2015, 322, 333, 323. So consistent. And then the first half last year was really bad, but the second half was 325, which is right in line with who he is. So I'm willing to say 330 ERA, high strikeout rate, and the whip's a little high, but whatever. I think the win total won't be really high with him as a member of the Rays, but that's pretty fickle anyway. So for me, he's like a great number two starter. He's either someone you pair with a Darvish or a Price to balance the fact that you didn't get Bumgarner, or if you do pair him with someone like Bumgarner, then you just forget about starting pitcher for several rounds.
We move to tier four, and this to me is one of the big drops when you move from talking about guys with enormous upside like Darvish and Strasburg, or guys you feel really safe with like Cueto. Then you start getting into guys where the flaws are a little more evident. Kyle Hendricks, Carlos Carrasco, Jacob deGrom, Rick Porcello, Carlos Martinez. I love Martinez. I'm a big fan, and I'd love to have him as my second guy. deGrom, boy, I'd sure be happy getting deGrom down there, but again, it's a risk kind of guy. How much, once you're at this point, does what you've already done factor into where you go with these kind of starting pitchers?
Yeah, it definitely factors. I think if you already have two starters, I'm pretty comfortable with just skipping this tier and letting. To me, these are maybe like your low end number two. So the guys who in your draft who don't have two starting pitchers, they're the ones they have to reach on because they didn't get a Strasburg or an Archer or someone like that as their number two starter. There's a lot of volatility here as far as will Hendricks and Porcello follow up those outstanding seasons. Carrasco is proving to be a pretty big injury risk. DeGrom's an injury risk. To me, Martinez is the safe one in the group, and he may be the one that I think that I would be interested in getting on draft day.
Martinez last year, 174 strikeouts, 195 innings, doesn't really match with what we know about his ability, what he had done previously. How hard is it for you to see Martinez doing something more like 210 strikeouts and 190 innings?
It's possible, but I do think he may be trending towards that really ground ball heavy, use your defense, not a strikeout per inning kind of approach. So I could see 210 strikeouts or maybe more like 200. What I'm looking to see from Martinez this season, I think he could be in that third tier at least by next season. What I want to see from him is the 210 innings. Like he's trending there, 179 in 2015, 195 last season. If he can get a little deeper into games by getting those ground ball outs and then get into the 210 inning range, I think then we could see 200 strikeouts and then he's ready to go to that next tier, because that's a pretty small jump and his injury history is pretty good compared to the other options there. I think that's why I feel a little more comfortable with him. Plus, I just feel really good about the Cardinals as a team and their bullpen and their lineup and their ability to support him.
Do you have any read on Carrasco at all? Because, boy, he looks so good, and then even upon coming back, it was like something just wasn't right. And even if he's healthy, I worry that there's just something amiss with him.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. There's just something I can't settle with him going into this season. As far as last year, I was pretty optimistic on him, but then I heard a couple people, you know, around the industry just kind of mention, like, hey, this is a guy who, let's not forget, who's never really done it, who hasn't done the 190, 200-inning season, and sure enough, he didn't even come close to it last year. And now I'm in a little bit of a, like, I'll believe it when I see it kind of mode for him, and I think that's why he's down in Tier 4. I'm pretty sure he was a third-tier guy last year,
yep.
in with those Cueto-type pitchers last year and Archer and everything. So he's kind of dropped a tier for that uncertainty. I would take him as my number two starter, but I think then I would feel a need to definitely get at least one of the guys that we'll talk about in Tier 5 to support him, and maybe even two of them.
And so we move on to that group, and it's a big group, and this is a point where we start kind of getting into what flavor do you like. Greinke, Tanaka, Hamels, Keuchel, Duffy, Rich Hill, Tehran, Aaron Sanchez, Quintana, Garrett Cole, Kevin Gausman. There's a whole lot of different approaches here depending on what you want. To me, the one guy who jumps out of this bunch, and the one guy who could maybe even jump two tiers by next year or even by the second half of this year, is Danny Duffy. The stuff is ridiculous. The performance was really encouraging. Clearly a high-risk guy just because he's got a very short resume. He has a very short time doing this, but I think I like his upside. I think I like it more than anybody on this list. Is there anybody you'd put alongside him as far as upside from that list?
Well, I think, to me, Rich Hill, his upside's ridiculous because when he's pitched, since he came back to the majors, he's been as good as almost any pitcher. It's just that he's had so many injuries. If Hill made even 27 starts, 28 starts, I think he could be a top 15 starter. It's just so unlikely that that'll happen. But to chase that upside, if I came out of, let's say my number one starter was Bumgarner and my number two starter was someone really safe, like a Kyle Hendricks or someone like that. I know Hendricks will regress, but, you know, he's a good health track record and he'll probably be fine. Then I would be excited to make someone like Hill my third starter and really go for it to have maybe the best pitching staff in my league if Hill can stay healthy. And then knowing that if he can't stay healthy, that I'll probably be safe with my top two starters. Hill is one of the hardest players to rank for this season. And his value, I think, also depends wildly based on what kind of a league you're in. If you're in a 10-team league, I'd be all for taking him. If you're in something really deep like an NL-only league where there won't be anything on waivers when he gets hurt, then I'm really wary of picking him.
Who's the safest guy for you in that bunch? Who's the guy that you get in there and you say, okay, that's settled? Is it Quintana? Is it Hamels? Who from that bunch do you just kind of plug in and say, okay, that's one thing that's settled?
Yeah, I think you named the two for me. I think we saw kind of what Hamels, I think we saw Hamels a little low end last year. His ERA could rise a little bit, but it's because his peripherals weren't that good last year. But I think those poor peripherals last year are kind of the low end for him. He should be fine. Like, if he's your number three starter, I'm sleeping good at night feeling that. And Quintana, same thing. Quintana, I'll say the same thing you mentioned about Archer, where he could have an unsettled season, especially if he starts it with the White Sox and then it's just constantly in trade rumors and eventually dealt. But I think that probably is overthinking it a little bit. His numbers year to year have been really consistent.
I would be curious to look this up, whether this has ever happened for a guy who made 25 or more starts each of these 3 years. Zach Greinke's ERA in 2016 is equal to, if you add his ERA from 2014 to his ERA from 2015. They are the same number, 4.37. I realize there are some factors in there, not the least of which is the ballpark. There was some bad fit, and I don't mean personality, I mean baseball-wise with Greinke there. But that's not unprecedented, but a pretty unusual fall. How much do you think Greinke gets back, and how, put it another way, if you took Greinke as your third or fourth guy, would you be excited that you might have gotten a steal, or would you sort of be resigned to this guy's going to be pretty good because we know he's got the stuff and he's been real good in the past?
Yeah, I would be I'm not that excited about him for this year. I think a high threes ERA is kind of what I'm envisioning. The park is a big factor. Their bullpen, I think, will be one of the weakest in baseball, and that will matter for securing wins for him. I just You and I were pretty low on Greinke in comparison to most other people in this industry prior to last season when he was coming off that magical season and people were talking about him as a surefire ace. And you and I were kind of talking about him as maybe he's more like a good number two starter on a regular fantasy team. To me, there's this neat tier inside tier five of Greinke, Keuchel, and Cole, who were all about top 15 starters last season in most rankings and now are way down in tier five. And they're your boom or bust tier five guys in the sense of if they pitch like they did last year, they're going to be bad picks even in tier five. And if they pitch like they did in 2015, you know, then you're going to get a huge steal. Out of those three, which of them would you be the most interested in taking?
Well, the guy I'd be most excited to get was Cole. I mean, I think he's the one of those guys that I think has the greatest chance to recapture what he was, because he's the guy where, you know, relative to Keuchel, I think that his heights were a truer representation of what he is capable of. You know, Keuchel at least gives you innings. So, you know, as a kind of a fourth guy who maybe has some upside, particularly in an AL-only type of environment, you know, I'd be happy with him because he's going to take the ball, he's going to pitch in front of a good bullpen with a good lineup, and there's upside. But the guy I'd be most excited about would be Cole from that bunch.
Yeah, I feel the same way, and I tried to check myself to think, is this just because I believe so much in the Pirates organization as far as managing their pitchers? And I do think that's part of it. I think if you put Cole in Arizona and Greinke in Pittsburgh, I would flip, to be honest, my view on the two of them for this season.
For a lot of reasons, let's be clear.
Yeah, with the age for Cole, with the fact, I agree with you, with Cole and Keuchel as the younger guys in comparison to Greinke, when they were both so good in 2015, like Greinke was getting a lot of calls outside the strike zone, a lot of swings that way. You know, he couldn't keep that up last season. I worry about him being able to get them back again in 2017. Whereas Cole, to be honest, I think if Cole's healthy, he probably jumps at least one tier and maybe two. I think if Cole's healthy for 30 starts this season, that he's a tier three or four pitcher.
That's exactly it for me. Is that to me the true pitcher that a healthy Gerrit Cole is easily the best pitcher of those three guys. Now, so he's the guy. You know, we one of the things we talk about sometimes is good or hurt. He's the one guy of that bunch that I feel falls under good or hurt. And the farther you get down in your draft, the more you like guys like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I said with Rich Hill, a lot of it depends, too, on your league size. In a 10 or a 12-team league, good or hurt is a good way to go in the middle of your draft because you can replace them. And in an NL-only league, it's not so great because when we hit hurt, then you're probably just putting in a middle reliever.
All right, well, that's Fantasy 411 for this week. As we told you last week, we are back to a weekly format later in the week next week. But we are getting on with our player previews, and this is a really fun time in fantasy. It's a really fun time in baseball. Be sure to check out MLB.com/fantasy to see the fantasy player preview, to see all the work that Fred put in. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and thanks, Fred Zinke, for taking the time to talk.